Broadcasting.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order, and we will start by taking the roll.
Senator Finley.
Senator Finley, present by video.
Senator Riley.
Present by video.
Senator Wagner.
Is present by video.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Excuse, and he'll be joining us soon. Oh, wait a second. Present by video. Okay, today we have a public hearing on Senate Bill 164. We've heard this bill before, but we have new amendments to consider. So I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 164.
Chair Burdick and members of the committee, Senate Bill 164 is our cat bill, and there are three amendments posted in OLS that are new to the committee, I believe. And I am sharing my screen to show a table that details all of the changes in a section by section format. But for the committee today, I'll kind of overview the policy changes in each section briefly. The table only describes the dash 10 and dash 11, but there is a dash 2 in OLS. And the dash 2 exempts from commercial activity receipts from the sale of prescription drugs by a pharmacy. The dash 10 and 11 include a number of technical fixes and clarifications that I'll go through now. And again, this table posted in OLS has additional detail than I'll describe currently. Section 2 makes a change to require taxpayers that are filing on a fiscal year basis, where their fiscal year is not the same as a calendar year, in order to help with administration of the tax. So they have to register with the Department of Revenue. They file a short year tax return to address that difference in timing of the years, and they prorate the threshold for registration as well as the tax rate threshold. And it provides the Department of Revenue rulemaking authority related to that. And then the next policy change shows up in Section 5. There is a change to the CAT to clarify that, or to change that foreign and alien insurance companies are exempt from the CAT, and these are companies operating outside the state of Oregon. And then it also limits the definition of commercial activity to exclude receipts by an insurer. And this is, both of those pieces are related to the retaliatory tax impact that the CAT, that we've heard some testimony on related to the CAT. Okay, the next policy change, also in Section 5, excludes from commercial activity exchanges of vehicles between franchised motor vehicle dealerships. And in the chart here, I've tried to indicate that the dash 10 allows for new and used vehicles to be transferred between these franchise motor vehicle dealerships, but the dash 11 allows only new vehicles to be transferred. In Section 6, motor vehicle dealers are allowed to collect estimated CAT from purchasers of leased vehicles, not just sold vehicles. That's a change as well. The next policy change shows up in Section 13, and this was a change that I believe the Department of Revenue testified on earlier, and it changes the deadline for businesses that have closed or been sold to file with the Department of Revenue from 45 days after the closing or the sale of the business to April 15th of the following year. And that's for tax administration or ease of tax compliance, I believe, on the on taxpayers. And then in sections 14 and 15, there is a removal from statute, the specific mention of specific penalties to clarify that the tax administration penalties are not limited to those that were explicitly mentioned in statute. And that was another request by the Department of Revenue. And then in sections 16 and 17, the applicability dates are defined. And in section 18, the effective date is defined. And of course, I'm happy to answer any questions for the committee on those amendments.
Okay, questions from the committee. So basically the 10s and 11s are the same, except the 10s apply to used vehicles being transferred from one lot to another, and the dash 11 only applies to the new vehicles in that situation. Is that correct?
Chair Burdick, that's correct. So the only difference between the 10 and 11 is that the 10 allows used vehicles to be transferred, but they both include new vehicle transfers.
Okay, and they both have all the same provisions otherwise?
Yes, correct.
Okay. All right. And then why don't you go ahead and describe the dash 2 amendments as well?
Sure. So the dash 2 amendment exempts from commercial activity the receipts from the sale of prescription drugs by a pharmacy. So it takes the introduced version of the bill and then adds an exclusion from commercial or an exemption from commercial activity for those receipts.
Okay. And I see that Senator Boquist has joined us. Welcome, Senator Boquist. Please mark him as present by audio, correct?
Yes, ma'am. Not working well today.
Okay. All right. So we'll start with our witness list, Nikki Dobe. And then that'll be followed by Exan Culver. Okay, Nikki.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Committee. My name is Nikki Dobe. I am a state and local tax partner at the law firm of Evershed Sutherland. I'm here today to testify on behalf of the Standard Insurance Company. Very briefly, I'm just here to let you know that the Standard is supportive of both the dash 10 and 11 amendments as they relate to insurers. These amendments do provide significant clarifications that will provide Oregon insurers certainty and relief with respect to the retaliatory tax that they are being faced with in other states. So I will leave it at that. I know that there will be others testifying on this particular issue and will stay on and happy to answer any technical questions if the committee has them. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? None at this time. Exan, followed by Scott Brune. Exan, are you with us?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am Exan Culver with the Oregon Department of Revenue. Here to talk about the dash 10 and 11 amendments and let you know that they do address the technical issues which we brought to your attention in the January public hearing, and they are also identified in our written testimony. As you will hear later, we did work with stakeholders on the provisions that would allow taxpayers to use their federal tax year or fiscal year filing versus the calendar year filing, which is currently in the statute. So we don't have any concerns with those provisions. However, there is one additional change that needs to happen within Section 13, where we had talked about the concerns with closed or sold businesses. The current statute language requires them to file within 45 days of that closure, and we had asked for it to align with the annual tax filing due date. Now with moving to a fiscal year filing, the language in Section 13 states that that return is due on April 15th, and it just needs to be modified to mirror the due date, which is in Section 12, aligning with the 15th of the fourth month following the end of the tax year. And that's also identified in our written testimony. So just to wrap it up, we're able to implement the changes in either the dash 10 or the dash 11 amendments, whichever you choose to go forward with. And I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, questions for Ms. Culver? Not seeing any questions. We'll move to our next witness, Scott Brune, followed by John Mangan.
All right. Well, thank you, Chair Burdick Committee. My name is Scott Bruin. I'm the Director of Tax and Fiscal Policy for Oregon Business and Industry. OBI is a member-led business trade association with about 1,600 members who employ nearly 300,000 Oregonians. Thanks for this opportunity. Just very briefly, we are in support of Senate Bill 164, as well as the dash 10 or dash 11 amendments, whichever you choose. Just real quickly on both those amendments. First of all, we very much support the change, the flexibility for company's fiscal year ends that don't necessarily match with calendar ends. We think the fixes will reduce filing complexity, reduce compliance uncertainty, and certainly reduce compliance costs. So we're very favorable to that. Also, in both the dash 10s and the 11s, we are thankful and supportive of the clarifying language, as Nikki mentioned, around the retaliatory tax. So with that, unless there's any questions, that's all we have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Bruin? No questions. John Mangan, followed by Greg Rimmensberger.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and Vice Chair Boquist, for the opportunity to testify today. John Mangan, I'm Vice President and Deputy for State Relations with the American Council of Life Insurers. We have about 240 members doing business in Oregon, including the Standard. And I think you may remember, Madam Chair, that I used to work for the Standard for almost 18 years. And that's to tell you how old I really am. I was actually around when a group of domestic companies worked with then Attorney General Kulongoski to actually craft the current Oregon tax code as it relates to insurers. So I want to say to you, thank you for taking the time. And also, we support the dash 10 and dash 11 clarifications. I believe that they are a true reflection of the original intent of how that law was supposed to work. And I believe that they remove ambiguities that could hurt the domestic companies, especially Standard, as they go to other states in the retaliatory tax. So I think these changes will help eliminate that unintended consequence. And we support the intent and the language itself. And I'm happy to answer any questions if you like, but that's my testimony. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Questions? See no questions. Greg Rimmensberger, followed by Billy Musio. Greg, are you here with us?
There we go. Off mute. Sorry about that. Chair Burdick, committee members, I appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee and talk about the dash 10 and dash 11 amendments. We are in support of Senate Bill 164 and either of the dash 10 or 11. I thought it might make sense for me to clarify the difference between the 10 and 11. I'll also point out, go back and say, my name is Craig Rimmensberger and I'm the executive vice president of the Oregon Auto Dealers, representing the franchise new car dealers in the state of Oregon. So that those differences between the 10 and 11 really kind of go down our path. We started working on these changes a couple of years ago in after the CAT tax was implemented, and looking at the last year's emergency session to make changes in there. Dealer trades are very prominent in our industry these days, as vehicle inventory on the lots is nowhere near the levels that it used to be. So dealers trade vehicles amongst each other quite frequently on new and used. On the new side, if we have a customer that comes in looking for a red one and we've only got a black one, we can see who has inventory of the red ones and we call and we make a trade on that. The way the business works in our industry, because of tracking of ownership of vehicles, there's actually a bill of sale that goes from dealer A to dealer B to show the path of life of the vehicle from the time the manufacturer sent it out to the original dealership. But it's virtually the same as if I had bought the vehicle directly from the manufacturer. I'm trading the black one for the red one. So it's really not a taxable, in our opinion, a taxable transaction. The Department of Revenue has been great in working with us on this and has asked us to better clarify what we mean by that. The difference between the 10 and the 11 is new only in the 11 and new and used in the 10. Our preference would be to have the dash 10 amendments because dealer trades do go back and forth between dealers, and in some cases, more often than not nowadays, they're within the same dealer organization. So if you've got a large dealership group that has multiple facilities, one in Newburgh, one in Portland, one in Bend, they may take a vehicle in and trade, and it's a better suit for their Bend store, so they'll send it over there. And again, you've got a paper trail that goes with a sale of a vehicle, but really isn't an actual sale. It's just a trade within our dealership. as well as trades with other dealers because of inventory being available on the internet. If you've got a customer that walks in and says, I'm looking for this particular vehicle and you don't have it on your lot, but you can see that it's in another dealer's area, they will get on the phone or through email and trade vehicles. I've got this in my lot, have send me that and so forth. And again, it's not technically a sale. So that would be our preference. But I would like to answer any questions if anybody has any concerns about the difference between the 10 and 11, and or I'll stay on for further questions if they come up after I'm off.
Okay, we have a question from Senator Riley.
So just a comment, Madam Chair. One of my fun jobs I did at one time was deliver cars between different agencies and different locations for the same agency. And so I know that the dash 10 is a reasonable compromise. So
thank you. And I actually had a question along those lines to it. As I understand it from your previous testimony, most of the impact will be on the new cars. Is that correct?
Chair Burdick, committee members, yes, that is obviously a higher tax impact on the newer vehicles than it is on the used vehicles.
Yeah, and some of my discussions with my counterparts in the House where there was resistance to this before, apparently it's because in the used car area, there are many more independent outlets. It's not as confined as the new car area. Is that correct?
There are certainly more used car dealers than there are new car dealers. We have franchise dealers in the state. There's about 243 new car dealers in the state, and there are thousands of used car dealer licenses around the state. So it is more prevalent. But again, the larger used car dealers interact with our new car dealers on a regular basis, both as brokers, if they've got somebody that comes in and wants to buy something that's new off our inventory, they will purchase through our franchise dealers acting as a broker to sell to them on a brand new vehicle. But there's, you know, because of that relationship, they will look and see you've got a car in your lot that I've got somebody that's looking for. And again, there's dealer trades that go back and forth on that level all the time.
And also for in the used car area, isn't it true that, I mean, you can say with new cars, if one is green and one is red, they're equal in value. But with used cars, you wouldn't have that certainty about their being equal in value, would you?
That is correct. And really, it's very rare on the new car side where it's exactly the same. And part of our intent when we were originally talking about this language is sometimes when you've got that, I've got a green one, you have the red one that my customer wants. When I call you up and say, you know, I've got this and my customer wants that, if you're overloaded on inventory at that time and you don't want my green one to come back, you'll just sell me that red one so that I can take care of my customer and get them off the road. That doesn't necessarily mean an exact exchange of dollars, as you're referencing in your question. However, it is the same as if I had called the manufacturer directly and placed an order for them. It just happens much faster than getting in the queue to get a vehicle sold to us, which is a non-taxable entity. And it's, again, it's just the way the business works because we're not carrying as much inventory on our lots. And when I say that, I'm speaking about non-pandemic times, because right now I think it's fairly prevalent that everybody knows there's not much inventory on dealers' lots right now because of the microchip shortage and manufacturing has come to a grinding halt. So it's even more important to do dealer exchanges. You know, if you're gonna take something off my lot, I want something back. But in the non-pandemic times, if I'm sitting on 10 of one vehicle and I typically want to have 7 or 8, if you called and said, I want to trade you the green one for the red one, I would say I would just prefer to send you the red one and I'll invoice you for it. So it's, again, it's the same as if we had bought it from the manufacturer. So we see that as a non-taxable entity where it's not an exact exchange.
Got it. Okay, thank you. Other questions from the committee? Senator Riley, your hand is still up. Do you still have another question? Okay. Okay, thank you. Billy Muzio, followed by Jeff Newgard.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Billy Muzio, and I'm an independent operator for Grocery Outlet. I am the owner of my own small business, and I contract with Grocery Outlet to operate their store located in Bend, Oregon. I'm here this afternoon to support Senate Bill 164-11 and 10 from the independent operator's perspective, who contract with Grocery Outlet and operate their stores. When the CAT tax was written and passed, it was understood that groceries were excluded from the tax, which we support, and this technical fix looks to resolve our concerns. As you know from my previous statement, our business model is unique. All of us Oregon mom and pop independent owner operators operate on a consignment basis, and our business model allows us to deliver superior customer service personalized to each of the local communities we serve. We do not own the product. We sell the product for a small portion of profits, yet under the current legislation, we're responsible for 100% of the bill. Given our unique problem, we support and encourage you to pass the technical fix to Senate Bill 164-11 or 10 to ensure that the groceries that the independent operators sell to the public are exempt from the CAT tax as originally intended. Thank you, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. We've been kind of stumped by this issue of Grocery Outlet because you are unique. To your knowledge, is there anyone else who does whose framework is like yours?
In the grocery retail world, not that I can think of off the top of my head, at least not in Oregon. I know there's similar scenarios in different states, but not that I'm aware of in Oregon.
Okay. All right. Questions from the committee? I see no questions. Thank you. Our final witness is Jeff Newgard.
Perfect. I get to close. Thank you, Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Boquist, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Newgard, representing the Smart Growth Coalition. We're a consortium of traded sector businesses with significant investments in jobs and capital projects and Dash 11 amendments. As an anecdote, I've heard from at least one taxpayer that it would take them nearly 9 months to translate the regular accounting information to comply with the tax accounting requirements. We've been working with the department and other stakeholders to find a way to allow taxpayers to use their federal tax year accounting to compute the tax. We believe the right solution is in these amendments. The amendments would require these taxpayers to file a one-time short year return for the period between the start of the year and the end of their fiscal year. The short year return would align future tax years to the income tax accounting, filing, and payment requirements. Most importantly, our understanding is that the fix for the tax year does not impact the amount of revenues collected from the tax. At the risk of sounding redundant, we want to emphasize that since this change is only about aligning the accounting period, there should not be an impact on the amount of tax ultimately paid. We've also submitted written testimony that explains the issue and proposed solution more thoroughly. We respectfully ask that you support and adopt the provisions in the Dash 10 and Dash 11 to simplify the accounting burdens for many taxpayers. And just as a final note, I just wanted to acknowledge and say thank you to the Legislative Revenue Office and the Oregon Department of Revenue for some rather long and lengthy email exchanges as we tried to work through all of the mechanics of kind of how to make this happen. So I just wanted to say thank you to them and thank you to the committee, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, and you heard the earlier testimony by the Department of Revenue, Exxon Culver, and I assume you have no problems with the technical change that she talked about.
No, that's absolutely right. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that that's absolutely right. You know, I think that it makes sense for the alignment with the fix that they're pursuing for calendar year filers to go and make sure that kind of it follows the kind of the same principle of timelines for fiscal year taxpayers.
Okay, thank you. Questions from the committee? I see no questions. So that finishes our testimony, and we will be taking up this bill again soon. Senator Finley, before we leave, did you want to say anything about the Dash 2 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been pushing in my button and I keep missing it. So, yes, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And I guess it's probably a posting error and marketing error on my part. I've received a lot of information from folks about the impacts of the cat on their prescription drug business. And I think it would help small businesses compete with larger businesses in a lot of regards. They work on such a tiny margin of both their prices are set by Medicare and their prices are set by the drug companies, and their margins are very, very slim, and they can't pass the cat on because of reimbursements for all their insurance companies. So this would benefit a tremendous number of small rural and pharmacists that are struggling mightily.
Okay, and Senator Finley, I would encourage you to reach out to Representative Nathanson, who also has put a lot of effort into this and is really trying for a tailored approach to the issue of the small independent pharmacies, who are in quite a different situation than the larger pharmacies. And so I would encourage you to reach out to her. I know that she's pursuing other strategies for dealing with this problem.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions on this or anything else? Okay, Chris, do we have anything else to talk about before we adjourn?
No, Madam Chair. That was your agenda for today.
Okay. And just as a reminder to the committee, we will be meeting at our regular time tomorrow. But on Wednesday, we're having the forecast, and because of scheduling, we will still be the guests of the House Revenue Committee for the presentation of the forecast at 3:15 p.m. on Wednesday. So we will have no regular meeting on Wednesday. So with that, we are adjourned.